December, from Jocelyn Brooks, The Flower in Season. Holly and mistletoe, I should have mentioned them, since this is a book about flowers, in the spring when they were in bloom. Yet who thinks of the holly and mistletoe as having flowers at all? The holly, says Miss Pratt. I'm not sure who Miss Pratt is. The holly, says Miss Pratt, gives a peculiar feature to the landscape in winter, for at that season we have no native evergreen which is at all conspicuous, except this and the ivy, and the masses of dark verdure yielded by these plants contrast beautifully with the naked outlines of the branches of the wood, as well as with the light, tender green of the budding trees of spring. I agree with Miss Pratt in admiring the inscape of the holly, a black living flame against the pale hedgerows. Its darkness has a more than nocturnal, a positively inspissated gloom in the shrewd December wind. The leaves rattle with a particularly dry, hollow sound. Hardy, in The Return of the Native, calls it a baritone buzz. Yet the wind seems scarcely to stir, visibly, the dark, solid mass of the tree, which remains static, an immobile pillar of darkness among the storm-tossed boughs of ash and hazel. The holly was formerly called holm, hulver, or hulfair. Its wood, says Miss Pratt, is still used for whip-handles, and a certain Dr. Rousseau of Paris made very extensive experiments in the decoction of holly, and discovered therein the existence of a hitherto unknown principle called ilicine, which appears to be of more service in some cases than even Peruvian bark. Gerard recommends a bird lime made of the bark hereof, which is marvellous clammy, and glueth up all the entrails, shutteth and draweth together the guts and passages of the excrements, and by this means it bringeth distraction to man, not by any quality, but by his gluing substance. The use of holly for the decking up of houses at Christmas is a comparatively modern custom. The mistletoe, on the other hand, is so thickly encrusted with myth and legend that it is almost impossible to sort out the tangle. The golden bough itself was, no doubt, mistletoe of a kind, though probably the true Virgilian shrub was a South European species whose leaves have a golden glint which is lacking in the northern plant. The Druidae, for so they call their diviners, wise men, and the state of their clergy, esteem nothing in the world more sacred than mistletoe, and the tree whereon it breedeth, so it be on the oak, certes to say, whatsoever they find growing upon that tree, over and besides its own fruit, be it mistletoe, or anything else, they esteem it as a gift sent from heaven, as a sure sign that the God whom they serve giveth them to understand that he hath chosen that particular tree. And no marvel, for in very deed, mistletoe is passing guisen, and hard to be found on the oak. Mistletoe is, in fact, extremely rare upon oak trees, preferring apple and poplar. According to Valency, it was sacred to the Druids, because not only its berries, but its leaves also, grow in clusters of three, united to one stalk. The Christian Irish hold the cimroy sacred in like manner, because of three leaves united to one stalk. Mistletoe, however, unlike the shamrock, came under the church's ban until comparatively recently. I am of opinion, writes Brand, although Gay mentions the mistletoe among those evergreens that were put up in churches, it never entered those sacred edifices but by mistake, or ignorance of the sextons. I have made many diligent inquiries after the truth of this. I learned at Bath that it never came into churches there. An old sexton at Teddington in Middlesex informed me that some mistletoe was once put up in the church there, but was by the clergyman immediately ordered to be taken away. Elsewhere, however, the plant was not only admitted to the church, but was even held in special honor there. The custom is still preserved in the north, and was lately at York.